is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from the USA Today NFL Wire. And this is episode 339, rather than the normal. Seth Cox on the show with me. He is away for the holidays. So my guest this evening, recording on a Tuesday night, is Blake Murphy from RevengeOfTheBirds.com and also the host of the Revenge of the Birds podcast. Blake, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good to see you, Jess. It's good to kind of have maybe not quite a crossover episode, I guess you could say, but good to sub in for Seth. And unfortunately, we get to talk about it with some tough news for Cardinals fans this Christmas.
Yeah. So in this edition of the show, obviously, the Cardinals did not beat the Indianapolis Colts. They lost 22-16 on Christmas night. However, they clinched a playoff spot. And so in this edition of the show, kind of what we're going to go through, we're going to talk about the playoff clinching. So does it matter how they clinched, because they obviously didn't win to get in. We're going to go through what happened against the Colts. We're going to talk about the remaining games on the schedule. What's got to happen in the final two games? What hope is there to win the division still, and then take a look at their week 17 game that they have against the Dallas Cowboys. But before we get started, since we just had news that hit the internet, the NFL announced late Tuesday of the passing of John Madden, the iconic, you know, Hall of Fame coach, broadcaster. Most of you guys probably now know him for the franchise video game. So let's just talk a little bit about that. When you heard the news, Blake, what's your reaction to the impact, what your memories about John Madden and his impact in the NFL?
Yeah, Jess, I think the first memory that I have, and this is me being a millennial. You grow up in an age where we didn't have, you know, Pat Summerall on TV with John Madden. It's only watching the old clips of those type of calls on YouTube was more of my generation. But I remember some of the ads and just the explosion of Madden as a video game, where I think we were just talking about it before the air, that the first memory I have was this boom, tough acting, ten acting type of ad that would air during like the 2001 Super Bowl, when you're watching like the Rams going up against, I think it was the Patriots that year. Who knew what was going to happen with Tom Brady? But being able to see kind of how he became in a lot of ways this ambassador, or this person who was, you know, growing up, you didn't know who John Madden was, but because of the Madden video game, the Ask Madden, all of those different things, it was kind of like he was almost one of those, like when you talk about, like, you know, what would be one of these biggest stars on the planet? Like, you know, you ask any millennial or Gen Z kid today, they may look at the Avengers. So I kind of think of him as like that NFL version of it. And when you look at the video game of how things like the Madden curse became something huge, how just the rise of video games in general have been, and how just completely dominant that is in the sports market today, I think I remember reading a story that the developers originally could not put 11 guys in the game. They're like, hey, we're going to play this game with just 6 guys because that's all we can handle. And he said, well, you're not putting my name on it then. It's got to be real football. And it's just that kind of commitment to that old school mentality, I think, that really stands out. And being 85 years old, dying unexpectedly, it really does kind of feel like, in a lot of ways, that he's from an older era of the game. And something that, you know, we didn't get to watch when you're my age, but you at least can appreciate it. And that was something that I think he's stood for.
For me, I am old enough to remember John Madden in the booth. I obviously am not old enough to remember John Madden, the coach. However, I do remember the Pat Summerall John Madden broadcasts, and he was, I will have to say, the first great color analyst that I remember, because of the, as we've seen, you know, over the last 20, 25 years, the emphasis of having former players, former coaches being on the broadcast teams to get them to give the taste and the spice and the knowledge from on-field and behind-the-scenes knowledge of football. And John Madden did that with a big personality. I remember, you know, I grew up as a teenager in the 90s. I'm significantly older than Blake, but I got the Sports Illustrated article. They had a feature on him, the Madden bust, the fact that he was afraid of flying, so he bussed everywhere. And then the early, early iterations of the video game. I played the games that still had Madden and Summerall doing the broadcast, and it threw me back to my days as a teenager. It is a sad day for the NFL. We know that, if there is anyone, probably anyone, that is going to be immortalized, like truly immortalized in terms of impact in the NFL, it's Madden. That's because now he's more than a person. He's an entire franchise. Even today's gamers, who Madden NFL 22 this year, which is as big as it's ever been, you don't hear the Madden voice. But everyone knows what Madden is. He's transcended the sport to generations. So we're talking about, you know, my son who's 20 years old knows Madden, or knows the Madden name, as opposed to my dad, not a big follower of football, but recognized the name John Madden. And so, rest in peace, big guy. Big impact on the NFL. He'll never truly be forgotten. And those of us who are lucky enough to hear him in some way, that's something that we really got to treat for. So let's move on, and let's talk about, as we get started, specifically, the Cardinals clinched a playoff spot. First time since 2015. So unfortunately, it's not the way they wanted to do it, but they are now guaranteed a spot in the playoffs. They won 10 games that they failed to clinch by winning. They lost against the Rams. They lost the Lions, they lost to the Colts, but with a little help, they were able to clinch a playoff spot thanks to a loss by the San Francisco 49ers and the Tennessee Titans. And then, thanks to the LA Rams beating the Minnesota Vikings, and had the Vikings somehow been able to beat the Rams, which would have been more helpful, the Saints did lose on Monday night, so they still would have been able to clinch. And so there's been mixed feelings across Cardinals Nation, against the Bird Game, across the Red Sea, as to, does it matter how they clinched? Blake, tell us what your initial thoughts on how they clinched. Does it matter that they didn't win to clinch?
Yeah, I think at least what matters the most ultimately, as we've seen in the past, is you want to play your best football during December, but if you played your best football earlier in the year and you're back into the playoffs, you're still in the playoffs, and that means that you achieved your goal. And I think we talked about this, I know, just before the call, but last year the Cardinals, they had an easy schedule. We thought that at some one point they could be 6-0 because they played teams like the Jets. They had the Andy Dalton Cowboys, but they dropped two games at the beginning of the year to the Lions and to the Panthers. And as a result, when it came down the stretch, those were games that you really felt mattered at the end of the year. This year, instead, by starting out 7-0, by being able to get to that 10-win mark, you feel like at least that you can see the progress. Now, that being said, I think it was Tim Ring, I think, had probably one of the best metaphors for it. He said, like, it's like your girlfriend walks up to you and says, "Hey, honey, we're breaking up, but you can keep the dog." That's kind of, I think, how a lot of Cardinals fans were feeling. When it's, hey, you're in the playoffs for that one, but you just lost three straight, including to the Colts, and you play the Dallas Cowboys next week. Good luck. I think a lot of Cardinals fans, at least, have preferred to want to see this team in clutch situations be able to go out and perform well and win. And the fact that they didn't on Sunday in what could be called a, you know, playoff type scenario, like it's not that it was fully winning you're in, but that they didn't come up as expected is definitely, I think, disappointing. I don't subscribe, however, to some of these, you know, the doom and gloom of like, we don't deserve it or we shouldn't be here.
Fire everyone anyway.
Yeah, I don't think that that's the case. And you should especially be saying that, hey, the Cardinals have been such a down franchise for so long. The fact that they've been in the playoff picture, been one of the best teams, and it's not just that, you know, they're backed into the playoffs like how last year they would have needed one game and they're in. They're one of the first five teams in the entire NFL to clinch and get into the playoffs, even in a tough NFC. I think that whatever stands with the season, you know, we can talk about what happens in the upcoming games or the playoffs, but I think that that's at least an accomplishment, and that should be something that should be viewed as a positive, and hopefully will be helped as this a positive for the season, and that it'll be a fondly remembered season. Some of that, of course, may change as it is a what have you done for me lately league.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you looked at the season, like if we go big picture, I think back to before the season predictions, I believed the Cardinals had a Super Bowl ceiling, but that was everything going well. And I predicted a 10-win wild card team. It very well maybe end up being the same thing. So they met expectations. In fact, if you look at now the 3-year course and arc over under Cliff Kingsbury, is that the end result matched the perspective, sort of the perception of what the Cardinals were going to be. It's just that each of the last 2 years, they raised expectations unexpectedly early, which leads to disappointment down the strip. So obviously they folded last year for a number of reasons. They lost those, you know, ultimately it came down. Like if we could look at one thing, Zane Gonzalez makes that kick in New England there in the playoffs, but they didn't. Then they lose. They have games against backup quarterbacks against the 49ers and the Rams, and they can't pick up wins. Kyler gets hurt in week 17, and it ends up being the, you know, the Bears, who, you know, Matt Nagy's about to get fired, and they went to the playoffs, what is it, 3 years out of four? And it feels like, it's just that disappointment, and everyone's waiting for. They saw what happened last year where they missed. They start out 7-0. And I think more than anything else, we look at two games. The fact that they lost to the Panthers and more specifically the Lions. Because if they beat the Lions and clinch and win that 11th game, guess what? No one's as nearly as concerned about the loss to the Packers, the Rams, and to the Colts. Even though national television primetime games all at home against quality teams and they can't pull out the win. And so it is lending itself for that broad narrative that they are frauds, that Cliff Kingsbury is not a good head coach, that they're chokers, that it's a poverty franchise. I will say this. I am concerned. But I'm glad they made the playoffs. And ultimately, it doesn't matter how you get in as long as you get in. But the problem is they started way too good to back in. And while it's not technically backing it in, they went 0-5 in games over the last 2 years when all they had to do was win one game to get in. So they controlled their fate. And in 5 straight games now, when they controlled their fate, they failed to do so. So while it is yet an accomplishment, that does not come without concerns and worries with the way that they're playing.
Yeah, and I think you hit it on the head as far as the games that they lost earlier in the year, especially that these are not games that are like, it's not like they're playing, you know, the Bucks and Tom Brady. It's not like they're going out against the Packers on the road at Lambeau. This is a game at home against a Colts team in which essentially
all three teams were shorthanded.
Yep. The Lions had one win on the season and had essentially not been able to beat anyone for the most part outside of a Vikings team that was on, I think, a last second type of play as well. And you kind of didn't come play and show up. And I think with, you know, early in the season, we could kind of excuse some of the Packers game because, all right, Vikings game came down to, you know, a lucky last second miss of a field goal that probably should have been made. All right, so they won a game you shouldn't have. You had a comeback that came up short with A.J. Green. You probably lost a game you should have won. You can kind of write that off. You look at the divisional game against the Rams. You go, okay, you were tied at the half. You kind of, you know, got beaten. The fact that the last two games, they've really seemed to just struggle to have the ability not just to put offense on the field, but just to put points on the board, whether it's with kicking issues or with interceptions that are happening at very poor times. It feels like that a lot of the play, for whatever reason, has just been sloppy enough that you would at least now are looking at a situation where you're pressed into winning some of those games. And you know, I think you guys have talked about some of this on your show, but it's really when losing a game in the NFL can happen to anyone at any time. It's when you drop back-to-back games that you kind of start to lose ground, start to worry a bit. So that's why when you start losing three games in a row, that's when I think more people start to hit the panic button, especially if you've been a team that has won those games in the past.
Absolutely. So it, coming down to the question is, does it matter how they got in? Yes and no. Yes and no. Ultimately, no. You get the playoffs. The problem is the way you're playing matters because it's really hard to turn things. It's really hard to say, think that you're going to have playoff success if you play awful down the stretch. And I will say, mm-hmm. if we go back to the Cardinals Super Bowl year, they had a stretch near the end of the year where they played like garbage, but they finished strong. That's not to say that won't happen. They got two games to turn around. We're going to talk about that. But ultimately, does it matter how they got in the playoffs? In the end, no. But yes, sort of, especially with the raised expectations early.
Yeah. And like you said, and this is something, a point that I think I've made too, is for every 9-7 Cardinals team that finishes strong and gets to a Super Bowl, you can talk about a 2014 Cardinals team that did not finish strong and just does not put up any sort of effort in their playoff game against what was a 7-9 and beatable Panthers team at the time as well.
Ryan Lindley, 2014. Mm. And I love Ryan Lindley, but I've said this probably a dozen different times on this show. The 2014 season was one of the great what-ifs. That season, which had all the pieces in place to make a run, was wasted. We wasted a playoff run on Ryan Lindley. And here's the thing. It feels like every time the Cardinals are in a situation to prosper, every single time something comes up when it comes to injuries. Injuries every time. So we go back to 2014. Carson goes down. Andrew Stanton goes down. We go to 2015. Carson Palmer's finger at the end of the season. And Tyrann Mathieu's torn ACL. We go to last year. Kyler's injury down the stretch. And that caused them to fade. Now you've lost J.J. Watt. We already lost Kyler for the group three games. DeAndre Hopkins took a significant amount of time. Rodney Hudson missed three games. And then two more games. It just feels like whenever the Cardinals are in a position to thrive, that everything gets in the way of that. And it just feels, and I know Cardinals fans have experienced the disappointment over and over and over again. And so I get the trauma of disappointment. But once we, and maybe it's all it'll take is a win. They're in the playoffs. We can appreciate that. But I know that there's fear. So let's move on. So coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about specifically the loss against the Colts. What happened versus Indy on Christmas night? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Indianapolis Colts come away with a 22-16 win over the Arizona Cardinals. A game we felt the Cardinals really, one, had to win to kind of get their mojo back. That was kind of the talk. And against a Colts team that was shorthanded already because of injury. So they were down a couple of starters on the offensive line. Then it became three starters on the offensive line. Then it was Darius Leonard. They were down Rocky Asin in the secondary. And then Eric Fisher gets hurt during the game. And so it was a shorthanded Colts team whose strengths actually matched up very well against the Cardinals' weaknesses to be the type of team that would give them trouble. But it looked like a type of game that the Cardinals needed, that should get right with, and they didn't. This was a game that it was just hard to watch because it seemed like everything that they could do wrong, they did. And they still were just right down to the end. They should have been able to do it. And honestly, based on what we've seen, the points left on, you know, the points that they left out there on the field, they should have won. And if you had to point to one or two things, Blake, what were the defining moments in that game for you?
Yeah, I think the opening to the game, in which I think Ken Summers had talked about how if he was Cliff, he would take the ball to start if they won the toss, go down, march down the field, operate, you know, using a run-heavy package with Chase Edmonds back, and exactly what the Cardinals did. And so on that third down pass play where Christian Kirk dropped the ball that was seemed like it was perfectly placed, it's like he's made that catch in the past. You just feel kind of like this, it's like that was there, you had everything set up, but at least you get to bring Matt Prater on. And of course he misses that first field goal. And it felt like it was one of those, I think back to that Panthers game on the road back in 2020 where Cardinals are driving down the field, they miss and wide open Andy Isabella, and it just felt like it took all of the wind out of their sails. The very next play, the Colts come out, Jonathan Taylor gets like a 43 first play. And it just felt like it was everything the Cardinals had done. They're suddenly now behind the sticks again. They're suddenly playing from behind again. And it felt like that was one of the defining places. And granted, they did scrap and climb back in, but there was just so many little mistakes, Jess, that happened throughout the game. I think to the, you know, we can talk about the fourth down play in which at fourth and one, you have a second false start by Josh Jones. I think he may have had three on the night. Suddenly it's fourth and six. And you've already missed an extra point in addition to the field goal.
And that would have been like a 56-yard kick at that point.
It would have been really far for that one. You're also talking about how, like, they're probably on the sideline, like, just trying to get the hold as best as they can for an extra point with a new holder, the backup punter at least, being able to take over and be able, after practicing with Cole, with suddenly having to improvise. And then you end up having that play that was a play that wasn't to Zach Ertz, that should have been a penalty, wasn't called a penalty for interference, running a bit of a wheel route, almost comes down with the ball anyway. It's not called. It shouldn't have been in that situation to begin with. It really was set up by that false start. I think that each of those different spots, and then the final, I think, big play was, you know, maybe you can talk about the Mo Alie-Cox run, but I think that the last chance the Cardinals had to kind of get back into the game to be able to take the lead, you have a field goal, it's lined up, everything seems like it's fine. The Colts get a bit of penetration. You end up seeing, you know, the Cardinals have to adjust just a little bit at least. And unfortunately for Matt Prater, it doinks off the side. And it really feels like when you look at it, that kind of accounted for it no less than at least 7 points. Maybe you're talking about a 14-point swing if Cardinals make that first down on that fourth down play, or if Christian Kirk comes down with that ball. That may have been a game that went completely in the Cardinals. And instead, you end up behind by 9 points, down by two scores, having to try to have a miracle happen once again. And I think it ended. And it ended about with a whimper rather than a bang.
Absolutely. So, yeah, if you, the kind of the thing that we knew going into this game, the recipe would be either get a lead, get a stop. You didn't need to stop Jonathan Taylor the entire game. You needed to stop him enough to get a lead. And they did just the exact opposite of that. So they got no points on that first drive on the missed field goal. And then the very next play, they go give up 43 yards. I will say, and just that one play, and that made go, oh, their run defense is terrible. They held him, outside of that one run, 26 carries for 65 yards, and I believe they tackled him for a loss 5 or 6 times. So they really did a really good job against Jonathan Taylor overall, except for that one play. And that, but and that, once that play went in, the narrative of the run defense it was unrelenting. And then he talked about once he hit that 100-yard mark, they were undefeated. But, yeah, it came down to the Cardinals that we've seen all season. They're not great playing behind schedule. They are excellent if they are ahead of schedule. They are all nearly flawless. They and all, for lack of a better word, maybe they are front runners. They kind of are. But the fact if they can get a lead and get a stop, they're almost unbeatable, because then it plays perfectly into their game plan. And ultimately, there's just too many mistakes. They at least 7 points just on kicks. And it's just amazing. Andy Lee getting COVID middle of the week was really unfortunate. And from what Cliff said after the game is when they, because he tested positive Wednesday, which means they didn't have him. They didn't have a holder in practice on Wednesday. They didn't have time to bring in Ryan Winslow. He came in on Thursday. So on Wednesday, probably when they did their special teams work in practice, they had Colt, and apparently they did fine with Colt as the holder. The problem was, for whatever reason, Colt folded as a holder during the game. And it's very interesting. Prater, as great a kicker as he is, when you go from his normal battery of Lee and Brewer to any changes, he goes from being Hall of Famer automatic to, I don't know, like Zane Gonzalez from 40 plus. Kind of, it's just like, it's amazing just how bad he looks, because he was real shaky when Bo Brinkley was a long snapper. Part of that is because he wasn't getting the snaps well. And so I know, having talked to kickers and family of kickers, just how critical the consistency is with holder and long snapper is. But, you know, Prater was the guy they brought in. They paid more than you probably would like, ideally, for your kicker. And he was supposed to be an upgrade over Zane Gonzalez, and in two games he's not one of the games that didn't matter was against Seattle, but they left 7 points on the board there, two missed field goals, an extra point against Seattle in Seattle, but these 7 points cost them. And then on top of that, you're getting playmakers not making plays. So you know, the Zach Ertz one, that was bad officiating, because that was clearly interference, and it was more egregious than the penalty that they called Marco Wilson for later in the game, where Marco got actually hurt. And so the inconsistency of officiating was one thing, the missed kicks. And then with no DeAndre Hopkins, they need the receivers to step up. Christian Kirk, he was productive. He had a good game. Statistically, and he's had a good year. He's 140 yards over the last two games for hitting 1,000 yards, which is fantastic. He's setting a career high. But with the absence of Hopkins, they haven't had a reliable guy to step up and make big plays. AJ Green was absent except for that one catch. And honestly, AJ Green doesn't have much left in the tank in terms of running, because if this were 2-3 years ago on that 33-yarder, he beats him. He runs that to the end zone. He doesn't have the legs left. And then the penalties. The false start. And that's what plagued them last year. They were one of the worst teams in drive stalling penalties. And they've been fantastic for the first half of the season. The last 2 weeks, drive stalling penalties have been awful. False starts on third and short and fourth and short, making them fourth and long. Josh Jones. Then you got the safety. Then you got the penalty, intentional grounding in the end zone, costs them another 2 points. False starts on third and short, fourth and short, cost them drives. The Byron Murphy penalty on a turnover was awful. And so it was just mistake after mistake after mistake. And they keep saying, well, we're shooting ourselves in the foot. Yes, but so stop. And because they're at a point now, because they're missing some of their best players, you can't afford to make mistakes. When you have no Hopkins and you have no Watt and you have no Hudson, you have no Alford, and then you're missing Jordan Phillips, you can't afford to make those little mistakes. And they keep doing it, and they look very below average.
Yeah, and I think that's what also makes it frustrating too, is despite the fact that they're making these mistakes, it's not like they were getting blown out by the Colts. This is a team that came out of the half, was able to force a punt. They had a Buda Baker sack. And then when you're talking about receivers stepping up, they did have a touchdown pass to Antoine Wesley. He did step up, got his first NFL touchdown, and that got the Cardinals the lead. So you're talking about, despite all of these areas, and we probably could spend some time talking about how, for whatever reason, the Cardinals just do not seem, even with Hudson in, they just do not seem to have it consistent week in and week out to be able to snap into the shotgun. There's either miscommunication, there's issues, and I think Kyler now is setting an NFL record for the most recovered fumbles, because they're just either snapping it wrong or snapping it low.
The number of aborted plays. Yeah. And
it's brutal.
If they didn't, so they had the opportunity to take the lead. Well, not just to take the lead, but to extend it. What is it? I think it was 13-12. 13-12 at that. So, yeah, so it was 13-12, and they had the opportunity to then go down and make it, you know, 2012, and that would have put them in a good situation. That's when they got pinned deep in their own penalty in their own territory with the punt. Two bad, you know, plays that didn't work, and then the bad snap, which turned into intentional grounding end zone safety. Just it's mistake after mistake, and I don't know why they keep doing it. And Hutt's going to be back this week, but this is such a tough thing. And it's basically everything they could have wrong. Now, bright spots. Chase Edmonds was fantastic. And like he had 125 total, I think 126 total yards. Zach Ertz was seemingly unstoppable on early on. And overall, start to finish, they did a really good job on Jonathan Taylor. They just made enough mistakes where Carson Wentz was able to pick them apart. They didn't take advantage. They didn't get enough pass. They didn't get home with their edge guys, ultimately.
Yeah, it's interesting, like you said, even talking about Chase. Like, we've seen the Cardinals in the past, and maybe this is less on just Cliff or Kyler audibling into plays and more just that when they're trailing. But when Chase, he was not really getting as much on the ground, but through the air, he was picking up like about 9 yards a catch. He was essentially being able to, for one way or another, make use of the fact that the Colts did not have their all-pro Darius Leonard linebacker into the game. And it felt like for whatever reason, the Cardinals just wanted to go away from that. Kyler threw the ball about 43 times or so in the game, which I think this is something I've noticed is he just has been throwing the ball a lot in these last three losses. And part of it is probably because the Cardinals have been behind. They've trailed, and so they've had to throw it a lot. But when you go from a guy that's throwing 30 times a game to throwing, you know, closer to 40 times a game, you know that they're trailing. And I think some of that, at least, is not necessarily, as people say, about, like, maybe running the ball more. I mean, Kyler and Chase had over 100 yards together just running the football. I think it just says a lot about how the defense is just was getting either key stops or, like you said, takeaways earlier in the season. And all these just kind of little mistakes. It's been more of like a death by a thousand cuts type of area with one or two big plays that just turn into backbreakers. Like you mentioned the Jonathan Taylor run. I also think of that 2nd and 20. They've basically put Carson Wentz under pressure. His tackles are out. And he completes a 20-yard pass on the sideline.
2nd and 17, 20-yard. You're like, what? How?
How did that happen? Like, did the pressure not get there? Did they drop back? Why was it single coverage there on the outside, the cushion there? Just there was just enough, at least, where I understand the fans who are kind of asking some questions on the coaching staff. Like, you know, there's a time or two that it just seems Vance Joseph will, you know, maybe misfire. There was a blitz that got to Carson Wentz earlier in the game that you saw a 3rd and 3, you know, brings everyone. Pittman runs across for a simple crossing route, picks up the first. And then that last touchdown where it's 3rd and long, they're going to the end zone. He steps up, probably throws the best ball he's thrown all year, but you still only rush 3 guys. And I think in that kind of a sense, you probably can't take Carson for granted. And even still, some of these backup offensive linemen, you know, they're knowing they want to get their shot too. So I understand some of that from the Cardinals, but I think rather than focusing and just saying this is a coaching issue or people who said this is just all the players got to make plays, it just shows that everything kind of is a just enough dysfunction for the Cardinals that it all feels pretty bad right now. And that's part of why you feel like the Cardinals are not playing their best football in December is, like you said, there's positives, but there's just so many little negatives that pop up, and a bunch of little negatives can turn into a big problem in these type of December football situations.
Coming up next on the Rise FC Red Podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on and talk about, well, they got 2 games left in the regular season. What do they got to do to change things? That's coming up next on Rise FC Red. We're back on the Rise FC Red Podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. So, the Cardinals have 2 games to go before they get to the playoffs, that first round, which the least, as of right now, they will be a wild card team on the road. But what's got to happen in the final 2 games? I think, if there's one thing, absolutely, that they need to, they got to clean up those penalties. Clean up the penalties, pre-snap stuff in particular. If there's one thing that's derailing the offense, it's pre-snap false starts. You know, Josh Jones has probably been the biggest culprit. That probably goes away this week because Rodney Hudson returns and Max Garcia likely slides back over to right guard. But their offense without DeAndre Hopkins, assuming they get James Conner back, they need to be cleaner because they don't have just the guy you can, okay, I'm going to throw to him and he's going to make a play. But you can't afford, if you're not getting number one receiver plays and you're getting good production from other one, but you're not making those game changing plays like Hopkins does, you can't afford, especially when your offense is really reliant on being on schedule. You've got to stay on schedule, not put yourself in holes.
Yeah, I think that's the, like you said, the biggest things to clean up are going to be anything that's a drive killer. You know, the Cardinals are a team that, when you don't have those takeaways, it means that those offensive possessions are that much more important. And, you know, maybe they end up having where some of that turnover luck balances back their way. That's one thing that's possible. We saw how, you know, it almost seemed like it was going to, and then that Byron Murphy penalty just got right in the way of that. But like you said, the offensive line's play has been, I think, the biggest thing it needs to improve. It's not even something you'd say is the blocking. It's those drive-killing areas. Like, safety is a great example you can talk about, but even if you just snap the ball and fumbles and Kyler Murray recovers it, all of a sudden you're off schedule. You've got second and long, or
snaps
even worse,
it's
just snaps and penalties. And what's weird to say is that Rodney Hudson might mean enough that he may come back and suddenly things just seem to get fixed. That's something that you can't really take for granted in this COVID type of era. You know, the Cardinals could have someone else test positive tomorrow. Granted, there is a new NFL rule we can talk about that may be beneficial for some of that, especially for someone like Marcus Golden, who tested positive this week. But those are the two areas, I think, at least, that they need the most, is just to be able to have the offense. Because if your defense is going to see Marco Wilson, you know, banged up and hurt, you're already seeing Robert Alford on IR. You're talking about guys needing to essentially have to get better pressure up front, just because the back end is going to probably have more guys that are either missing assignments or getting beat in coverage. And that's where your margin for error just is going to keep shrinking. And it's going to be on the offense to have to make that up.
Absolutely. So this team was built. It was built for the offense to thrive, and the defense overachieved. Well, and let's say they overachieved. They did better than expectations. Instead of being a middle tier off mid defense, which is all they really needed to be consistently good, a top 10, top 5 defense, which made them elite, which made them nearly unbeatable. They've lost players, enough players, and so they're probably not going to play as a top 5 unit defensively, but the offense has to step up and be a top 5 unit that they're capable of being. Even without DeAndre Hopkins, they should be able to put up points and yards. Defensively, they need Chandler Jones to get home. They need him to get sacks, especially if Marcus Golden is missing this weekend. And then, of course, you can't have the fiasco with the kicking game. That's got to get shored up. And hopefully that means, you know, with the week of Ryan Winslow holding, he's been the holder before. Now, this is back when it was Zane Gonzalez in 2019. And so he's done it before. But at least a week of consistent holding will shore things up, because you can't miss kicks and not have a pass rush and have offensive line penalties. Those three things make for bad football.
Yeah, especially with the defense, and this is where you have to give some credit, I think, to Vance Joseph, who, you know, the Cardinals, they lost Marco Wilson partway through. They lost Zach Allen for a bit of time. You are already down, you know, Jordan Phillips and J.J. Watt as far as your interior presence. And the fact that, you know, you saw some guys like Devon Kennard had a good game. You saw how, you know, the Cardinals essentially were able to function even with Isaiah Simmons beat up. You saw Chandler get home a few times. I think it is one of those factors where, like you said, it's one of those times where one of the leaders, those guys who are left on the team, have to step up and make plays. And while Chandler, you know, he did end up having, you know, he didn't end up having a sack in the game, did have a tackle for loss. It just felt like it was watching the Buda Baker show on Sunday, where he led the team in tackles, had a sack, two tackles for loss. He had an outstanding game. But if your safety is the guy who is essentially having to make all of those plays, it just shows you need to get stronger up front. I think I land with you that I don't know if the Cardinals are at a spot where, you know, this is a bend but don't break defense that's probably bent about as far as it can possibly bend. I think that the offense is the one that the focal point has to be on. And a lot of fans, I think, will be watching the offense this week, because if you put up another effort where you get Rodney Hudson back, you run the ball fine, you get behind on defense again, and suddenly you start pressing, that's when some of those mistakes tend to happen. And give Kyler Murray credit. He did stay mistake-free on Sunday. It's going to be a bit harder to do that, though, versus a Colts team without Darius Leonard, against a Cowboys team that is making a ton of takeaways, and maybe even a Seattle Seahawks team that will be looking to play spoiler as they play at home against the Cardinals, which is always a crazy game every year in and every year out.
Every single year. Coming up next with the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on and talk about the division. The Cardinals lost the division lead. What needs to happen for them to win it, if it's possible? That's coming next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. The division, they lost the division lead. It's actually, you know, if we look at how the season has gone, they've been in control of the division basically from week one. Technically after week one, and they weren't, after week one, they weren't in the division lead, or even after week two, because they didn't play any division games, or they started off the season with two of their two AFC games in the first three games. But they now trail the LA Rams by a game with two games left. It all is not lost. They still have a reasonable chance of winning the division, but they can't do it by themselves. They will need help. You know, the scenarios come down to this. So because the Cardinals need to win two things, they need to win out and have the Rams lose one game, or to have the Rams lose both games and the Cardinals win one is basically how it's come down to. If they win that game in Seattle, so if it comes down to it, so Cardinals, if they beat Seattle and can be tied record-wise, they don't have to have more victories than the Rams, because they can beat them in the division. If the Cardinals beat the Seahawks in week 18, they will be 5-1 in the division. The best that the Rams can do is 4-2. The Rams will be on the road in Baltimore this weekend and then come home to play the 49ers. Now, don't know about Lamar Jackson, and it looks like for the 49ers, Jimmy Garoppolo is probably done for the season. So we might not be getting much help. So we'll see what happens. And the Cardinals have two tough games. They are on the road against Dallas, and then at home against the Seahawks. Neither one of those a guaranteed win by any means. What chance do you give them of getting the division lead back?
Yeah, I think it really comes down to what type of Cardinals offense you're going to see going up against the Cowboys, and what kind of Matthew Stafford are you going to get? Because for those who didn't watch the Rams-Vikings game, the Vikings essentially, in a lot of ways, kind of blew that game. Credit the Rams for making some late plays, but there were three interceptions that Matthew Stafford had. He kind of went back to some of the old ways of giving the football away, and it really ended up kind of taking at least a Rams team being able to kind of drive down and get a late touchdown to be able to kind of get enough of a lead. The Vikings kept settling for field goals, had to use a trick punt touchdown just to get close. If you end up getting a bad Matthew Stafford that goes against a Ravens team at least and is throwing the ball to the other team, you know, that may be one positive or maybe a silver lining. That said, The Ravens this last week just gave up 525 yards to Joe Burrow and the Vikings, or I should say the Bengals. And this Rams team's coming off of that Vikings game in which they still were able to put up points. It's really going to be tough, I think, between that and the rookie quarterback. Now, granted, the Niners did beat the Rams earlier this season.
The Niners have their number. That's
they
one
have
of their
number.
But
they've
Trey
beaten
Lance.
Them multiple times. Trey yeah, Lance. Trey Lance is coming in. So we saw what the game plan was for Trey Lance. We saw how he just really wasn't as trusted by Kyle Shanahan. Their running game, at least, has been fine. A lot of their starting running backs have been nicked up. It's going to be really interesting to see how that game goes, but you know, for the Cardinals' sake, what's really interesting is, like you said, the opportunity that's here. The Cowboys are a team that's ahead of them. The Rams are a team that's ahead of them. If they can manage to be able to go into Dallas, you know, put up a shocker, Kyler Murray plays well every time he's in that Dallas
Never
Cowboys
lost
stadium.
In AT&T Stadium.
Never lost in that stadium. The Cowboys are coming off of a huge emotional high of a win. Maybe you come in and say, oh, this Cardinals team couldn't even beat the Colts. Maybe you can kind of end up being that trap game that, you know, we always talked about. Are the Lions a trap game? You know, as a team that they played early this season, like the Browns, that was a game that wasn't a trap game, but it was one that you felt like was going to be a challenge. Is that something where the Cardinals can get a win, be able to hope then maybe that some divisional thing can go in their favor? Because they could jump up to, you know, anywhere as high as the 3 seed. The Bucks are probably going to be the 2 seed this year. I wish that the injuries or COVID list would probably have a bit more of an impact, but Antonio Brown just looks like his old self, and they play the Jets and the Panthers in the next 2 games.
It
very well
lose.
Could be the, you know, the exact kind of recipe the NFL put up for a Tom Brady going into the playoffs feeling hot type of avenue. It's really hard to see the Bucks losing those games. Is it something that's possible? I think yes. I think what you really want, though, Jess, is you want to at least win one of those games if you're the Cardinals. Even if it's the Seahawks game, you want to end the season on a positive note. And if the Rams would lose both of those games for God knows what reason, then hey, all the more power to you. You will take that and walk in and view it as a gift like the Rams just gave you. I just think that it's not as likely. I think that the best scenario for the Cardinals to do that is to win both your games and then hope that you can at least see the Rams stumble just enough and then take advantage of that opportunity.
Absolutely. This game this weekend, though, it's going to be one heck of a challenge. This Cowboys team is rolling. They look good. And with that, coming out next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about the Cowboys. That's going to be a rough game. Let's preview it, make our predictions. Let's come to next on Rise of Sea Red. Back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. The Cardinals go to Big D to take on the Cowboys at AT&T Stadium, a place where the Cardinals beat the crap out of the Cowboys last year on Monday Night Football, but that was against Andy Dalton. Kyler Murray never lost there. Dating back to high school, he's always had big games. He's going home. He likes to put on a show. The problem is the Cowboys are incredible right now. They are rolling offensively. They probably have their best defense that they've had in years. They're taking the ball away at incredible levels. Trevon Diggs, 11 interceptions. The year that some of their players are having is incredible. They've got a running back that in Ezekiel and both a duo between Tony Pollard and Ezekiel Elliott that can give the Cardinals problems. And then if they're able to play off of that run game, I know Dak Prescott has not had a great, you know, a great run of games over the last, but I mean, he threw 4 touchdown passes in 3 quarters on Sunday night. What do you see? What challenges do the Cowboys give the Cardinals? Because it seems to be across the board.
Yeah, the Cowboys right now, as we speak, are the number one offense in the 2021 season as far as yards per game goes. Now, they haven't quite been the last few weeks, this dominant team. It's like, okay, maybe they're kind of stumbling a bit, mapping as well as they could, and then they hang 56 points on the football team as of last Sunday. So you're just like, good night. This is a team that, you know, it's getting about 30 points a game. They essentially have all of their guys back healthy. They've had, I know, Tyron Smith has been in some injury issues. Lyle Collins, I think, was out for a bit, but it's overall been a team that that really can just give the ball to just about anyone and on offense beat you in a variety of ways. And on the defensive side, their pass rush, like you said, has been phenomenal. Randy Gregory came back from being out of the league for a few years, has been tremendous. DeMarcus Lawrence is a threat. And it's really been that rookie linebacker who kind of has been more of an edge player. Like, it's a weird kind of comparison, but you're almost looking at kind of this, you know, Isaiah Simmons / Hassan Reddick type of athlete in Micah Parsons, who is a chance to set the sack record for a rookie. So there is a tremendous amount of talent on this Cowboys team. And that's where it's going to be hard for the Cardinals, because they're a quick strike offense. They can make guys miss. They can beat you in so many different ways. You really have to be able to find a way to just play good ball, tackle guys short, make sure that Dak feels just enough pressure that he's going to, you know, hit his hot read, and then the guy short of the sticks. That's been the most effective method beating the Cowboys. And on the other side, playing mistake-free football. You mentioned Diggs's 11 interceptions. When the Cowboys force a turnover, kind of like how the Cardinals were early in the year, they will make you pay.
Absolutely. There is a little bit of hope. Like, if you look at Dak Prescott's year, now he hasn't thrown an interception in each of the last 2 weeks. He threw three total against Washington and against New Orleans in weeks 13 and 14. But this is an offense that's hit the 30-point mark several times. Let's look at the number of 30s that they've hit this year, as they're averaging 30 points a game. They got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 games of 30 points from that, include 1, 2, 3, 4 of at least 40 points this year. Another two where they got to 27 and one where they got to 29. So this has been an offense that has been quite potent. They have, like, they're two running backs. So Ezekiel Elliott's got, he's not having a special year, but he's having a good year. He's got 899 yards on the ground. And then you add Tony Pollard, who's got 710 to boot. So they've got over 1,600 yards of rushing yards between the two of them. And you add to that that Dak Prescott's on the verge of 4,000 passing yards. He's got 29 touchdowns. So they've thrown 32 between he and Cooper Rush, 32 touchdown passes. They've got 13 rushing touchdowns this year. They are a team that really, they bring it offensively. And then defensively, you're getting 13 sacks from Micah Parsons. He was a guy supposed to be off the ball. It's insane. 6 sacks from Randy Gregory. Then you've got the interceptions. They've picked off. So it's the numbers. 25 passes this year, 25 interceptions, and forced another 13 fumbles on top of that. This team gets after the football. This is the type of game where the Cowboys can give up yards. They are number 19 in yards allowed, but number 7 in points allowed. So they're a team, they count on those takeaways. So if the Cardinals are clean and stay ahead, so if they stay on schedule offensively, they can put points up. And so it'll come down to which team creates the turnovers. Both defenses have been very opportunistic all season. You know you're going to get a good game from Kyler Murray. You know you're going to, like, Kelvin Beachum, he's going to want to show out there in the state of Texas. And so there's some players that are going to want to show out. But it's going to be interesting. You know, Christian Kirk spent his college career in Texas playing for Texas A&M. And he had a big game. He had two touchdown catches against Dallas last year, including the 80-yarder. So he dominated that game. Would it be fantastic? The problem is, who's going to match up against those receivers? Because you've got Michael Gallup. You've got Amari Cooper. You've got CeeDee Lamb. They are just they're incredible. They are incredible. And that passing attack, so CeeDee Lamb's got over 1,000 yards. Dalton Schultz, tight end, 769 catches, 733 yards. Amari Cooper has 60 for 768. You got Cedric Wilson, who's averaging over 13 yards a catch, 34 catches for 448. Michael Gallup. Is Gallup hurt? I don't remember.
No, he's playing, and that's one of the areas where he's out for a bit of time. He's a big play threat outside that can really open up their deep passing game or be able to pick up a first down. And I think, like you said, there's room for some opt-in Cardinals, but I think it has to almost play out like the Dallas game last year, which you can force two Ezekiel Elliott fumbles. That's, I think, your best bet because they're playing, like you said, such great football right now. They're able to catch up. The pass rush has been just something that's been unbelievable. You really just feel like it's one of those types of games where, and this is unfortunate for the Cardinals, but since the Cowboys can pass the ball or run it, like you played the number two rushing offense last week, you played the number six this week, you know, Merry Christmas to the Arizona Cardinals run defense. This is, I think, in a lot of ways, the Cowboys right now are playing in a way that we'd hoped the Arizona Cardinals yes. would have been playing. This team that has all these weapons, that has this dominant pass rush, that beats you with taking the ball away. And I think what the difference has been is unless there's some form of COVID outbreak that takes place in the next, you know, 48 to 72 hours, you feel ultimately like that the Cowboys are just a team that stayed and get healthy and are playing great football at the right time, while the Cardinals just have been more and more nicked up as the season has gone on, which is kind of what's a bit disappointing because this is a game that, you know, we talked about this early in the year. Were the Cardinals going to have three national televised games? Was there any opportunity for games to be flexed? And, you know, we ruled out this game because it was a morning game, but we did see the NFL put enough emphasis on this matchup where they moved it to the afternoon slot.
And it did get the number one broadcast.
And it is. And it's also going to be viewed by the majority of the country. So it's technically, this is almost your fourth national television game in a way, because this is going to be the game the majority of people in America are going to be watching. And in that regard, at least, if you're a Cardinals fan, you kind of almost, you know, maybe there's bad juju or some mojo you have with it. You just want the team to be able to go out and put forth a great effort. I think at least at best they can win the game. At worst, you just don't want it to be a case where you're talking about some, you know, 43-10 Cardinals where there's a garbage time touchdown, because that will only increase, I think, this narrative that you're seeing. I don't think that's going to be the narrative for this Cardinals game, but if it's one of those spots where the team continues to be on this downward slide, then it's going to be one of those avenues that's concerning because, you know, right now you look at the playoff picture, the first round they're matched up against the Dallas Cowboys, the fourth seed, with the Arizona Cardinals as the five seed. This could be a picture of the first round of the divisional playoffs.
Most certainly could be. Keys of this game, if the Cardinals can follow the recipe, score early, get ahead of sticks. So the Cardinals and the Cowboys are very similar in their run defenses. They're kind of middle of the road in terms of run defense overall, but the reason they've done well against the run is because they get leads. They are 24th in yards per attempt, averaging 4.5. Their opponents are averaging 4.5 yards a carry, but they're number 8 in terms of the fewest carries attempted against them. And that's kind of what the Cardinals have done this year. So if the Cardinals, since they'll have Chase Edmonds, who is rolling right now, and hopefully a healthy James Conner, if they are playing even or ahead, that's the way to kind of do what teams try to do to the Cardinals. Use the running game to control the clock. And it's what we saw Kenyon Drake do a year ago. He rushed for 164 yards and 2 touchdowns, and it was the play late. It was you chewing the clock up in the second half of the game. And if the Cardinals can do that, are they capable of doing it? Most certainly, but it's going to have to be they can't turn the ball over and they have to get early stops. Do I think that's going to happen? Those of you listen, you know I'm optimistic. I've picked a Cardinals win most of the year. I think they're going to come up short. I think it's probably going to be, though I think it's going to be high scoring. I think it's going to be like 31-28 Cowboys, I think. I hope it'll be that sort of fun game. But I can't predict the Cardinals to win the way they played the last 3 weeks. Although I do concede the fact they are very capable of doing it. I think they could turn around in a hurry, but they need everything to go well.
Yeah, I would agree with you. There's parts of me that, like you said, wants to pick Arizona in this game because it just feels like it's one of those spots where it lines up where whoever's the most desperate team, the Cardinals the last few weeks have had these little minor issues. Cowboys are coming off of this big emotional high. It just feels like right now that unless the Cowboys just come and lay an egg at home, that this is probably a game at least that the Cardinals, at least, like you said, will have to kind of play this Detroit football, run the ball well. I would love to see if they could, you know, throw the Cowboys off their game by throwing in a few more, whether it's either trick or design plays. We're not sure if they're getting Rondale Moore back or not this week, but being able to at least utilize Kyler's legs a bit more, whether it's off of bootlegs or just getting them a little bit more of a push, at least knowing that, you know, it doesn't seem like there's any limiters that he's had. If you can throw the Cowboys enough off of their game, and like you said, be able to kind of just run the ball well and efficiently. We don't know if they're getting James Conner back or not, but they at least showed last week with Chase Edmonds and Kyler that they at least are able to have an offense. It's just being able to make some of those last ditch plays. And I think it's really going to come down to ultimately, if there's turnovers in this game, can you be able to win the turnover battle and be able to make Dallas pay for it? I think that this is one of those games where there maybe is a turnover on each team. I think that Dallas, as a result, will probably be the one that gets ahead. I'm glad to hear your score prediction in a bit. I think that this is going to be a high-scoring game, but I see this as more of like a 36-27 type of game. I think Arizona, we look at the positive of their offense got going. They had a few big plays. Maybe there's one bad turnover or something that just went wrong at just the wrong amount of time. If the team can avoid that, I think they have a great chance to be able to actually make this a lot closer game than people are picking. I just think that right now, the way that both teams have been going, it's really hard to be able to pick Arizona. I think that we'll be going in with some optimism, hopefully, for that last Seahawks game. But I think this is going to be one of those dueling quarterback games that Kyler comes up on the short end of the stick.
So the as of Tuesday morning from the line, I saw that it with the Cowboys were favored by 5.5. So you've got the Cowboys winning and covering, while I've got the Cowboys winning, but the Cardinals covering. Both of us with the over.
Absolutely. Hey, I've been pretty good at picking Cowboys games this far, but that's usually because I'll pick the Cowboys and pick the over, and so far it's gone pretty well, I think, at least. Unfortunately, it has not gone the same way for Arizona the last few weeks.
It has not. With that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Hopefully, we're talking next week about a Cardinals win. Seth should be back next week, so we thank Blake Murphy as always. And we definitely thank him for being on the show. It was great to have you on, Blake. We know the two of us talk all the time. There's a group chat we have with me and Seth and Blake and Johnny Venerable from the PHNX Cardinals podcast. So a bunch of Cardinals podcasters in our own little group chat and our group text. So we'll be talking to each other for sure, but we'll get you on the show. If Seth's got to step out again, we'll definitely bring you back, Blake. Thanks for everyone for listening. That's Blake Murphy. I'm Jess Root. This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. We'll be back again next week.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.
Whoa!